to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
And this is Sean.
We're glad you could join us today. Maybe this evening, maybe this morning. Whatever
time. Sounds like morning for you, man. You tired?
I know I am doing my music from the Hearts of Space voice. Oh. I'm really enjoying doing these. This is so much fun, and I'm really pleased with the response. I've done so many projects over the years, and nothing.
Nothing is good as the Dark Side of Soul podcast.
No, nothing. Not as much reaction.
Oh, I see. Yeah, right. We've had a pretty good reaction. A lot of downloads of the first podcast, which was available publicly right from the get-go. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So today we're going to start. Last time we did tragic deaths, first of our tragic deaths, and by very popular request, today we're going to do our first of true crime series. Mm-hmm. In fact, this might be the whole impetus for the podcast in the first place, is we've gotten so many on the tours. People said, you should do a true crime podcast.
Right. Or add more true crime stories to the tour.
Your wish is granted. Well, who knows? Who knows? After doing all this, we might start adding them to the tour.
Yeah, yeah. I think right now we both just do Yoo Young Chul. We'll do a series on him a little bit later.
We're going to do Yoo Young Chul. I really want to do a multi-part series on.
Yeah, I think we'll work on that. We'll require some writing and
production. Every time, I mean, I'll tell you this with Yoo Young Chul. It took me a very long time to condense.
Yes.
All that research into just one 2-minute story for the tour. It's really difficult.
Yeah. I use his story as a sit down break on my tour. I do it a little bit longer. It's about 5 minutes maybe. It's probably the longest story on my tour.
Yeah.
So
that's going to be a multi-stage. So, Sean, tell us, who are we talking about today?
Yeah, we're going to talk about a group of serial killers from the early 1990s, 93, 94, technically through to the end of 95.
I was alive during that time.
Yeah, I was in high school. Yeah. These guys, they seem to be kind of the forgotten true criminals in Korea, like the forgotten case of reprehensible crime.
Wow.
Because people, like, we're talking about Yoo Young Chul, the Hwasong killer, who was just recently caught several months ago. They've always kind of been within pop culture in Korea. They've been within the media. There's been music and film produced about them. But the Jijeon Pa, or the Jijeon faction, often called the Jijeon clique, is a group of serial killers that a lot of people have either forgotten about or they just don't want to talk about them.
Mm.
And that could be because they were very, very disturbing. Their crimes are very disturbing. So we're talk a little bit about them too. Yeah, so
how did they get their start? I mean, well, tell me about their background. Well, tell me about, the background, yes. Where did they meet?
They're all ex-cons or criminals of some sorts. The head guy was named Kim Gi-hwan. He was about 20.
They met in prison.
I don't know. I'm not sure if that information has been revealed.
Okay.
A few of them may have met in prison, but what's key about them is that they were all from the lower rung of society.
Okay.
They were poorly educated. They were quite poor. And they suffered through society, and they often viewed themselves as not being given enough, as being ignored by the upper reaches of society by the elite. And okay. this kind of this shared hatred for the rich got them together. And they eventually decided in the summer of 1993
to start a political party.
You start a political party, yes, right. A small political party and that resulted in them in total murdering seven people. Yeah, five serial murders, and I think two others that were that were at the beginning of their spree, but before they kind of organize themselves into this gang. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, what's interesting is that they really did define themselves as a group. They had four principles that they followed, and this was the foundation of how they functioned. The key one, number one principle behind their group was, we hate the rich.
The key. Hold on. When you say key one, do you mean?
The key principle.
Okay, not the name of the leader of the group.
Oh no, not good ear, Joe. No, not Kim Ki-hwan. Now, him being the head guy, he may have come up with the four principles himself.
I'm easily confused.
No, the key one, the key principle was they hated the rich, and. Mm-hmm. The second principle is that they would continue committing their crimes, which of course involved murder, but also rape and torture, kidnapping. They would continue doing it until they stole 1 billion Korean won, which is roughly $1 million.
Mm.
So now in 1993, 1994, that was a lot of money in Korea. That was a ton of money, if it equaled roughly $1 million, say today. With inflation, I'm not sure how that looks on paper. The third principle, anyone who left their group, any traitors within their group would be captured and executed.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth principle was, trust no women, not even a woman's mother. And that's how they phrased it. Wow. So yeah, they had this misogyny as well. Those were the four key principles behind them, and those were the guiding principles behind what they did when they started their killing spree. So it's really now there's a lot behind this. Is a really like we could probably come back to this a little bit later as well to talk a little bit more about them or connect them to other. Murderers and episodes on true crime down the road. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting about them is that they somehow obtained the list of wealthy customers from a Hyundai department store in Gangnam.
Oh, wow.
So Gangnam has become a little bit more well known outside of Korea in the last several years. Oppa Gangnam style, Psy. Oh, and
I'm thinking of the Hyundai department store. There's one. No, I'm thinking of the one outside Apgujeong Station.
Very likely. Like, yeah, well, a lot of, they committed crimes or they kidnapped people from Yoksam. So the Gangnam.
Okay, Yoksam is northern Gangnam. Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, no, it's not.
I'm not entirely sure.
No, okay, I'm getting my Gangnam geography mixed up. No, I was thinking of Cheongdam.
Yeah. So, for anyone who doesn't know, anyway, Gangnam is the affluent, the key affluent district of Seoul, and completely bankrupt of culture. So, but that's just my personal view.
Oh, I'm not. I know. I'm sorry for people who are in Itaewon. I mean, in Gangnam or love Gangnam. I don't think they're gonna get. It's gonna get much love from us on this show.
No, probably not.
I avoid it any time I can. It's to say that the further one gets away from Gangnam, the better the food gets.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So somehow they obtained this list of wealthy customers of the Hyundai department store in Gangnam. And it's believed that they may have gotten the list from a disgruntled employee.
Oh, my.
So, bit of a problem there. And once they got the list, that was the list that they initially were thinking to use. That was their list of victims. And they were going to keep killing until they got a billion Korean won. $1 million, roughly. So
they had like a telethon. They had like the little thermometer. Hey, we hit this much. We're closer to our goal.
Joking aside, my guess is that they very likely did have something like that, because they all lived in Kim Gi-hwan's apartment.
Uh-huh.
He had a basement apartment of some sort, obviously not in Gangnam. And actually, early on, they weren't even in Seoul. But they probably, in that basement, that's where they committed a lot of the crimes, and that's where they built eventually an incinerator. That's where they burned bodies. So I'd imagine that they would have had a whiteboard or something keeping track, because for a group of people who were generally considered low class, white collar, uneducated, they were exceptionally organized.
Hmm.
And that's a little bit frightening in some ways, considering what they were doing. They were that organized in what they were doing. Poorly educated, I do remember reading before that the ringleader, Kim Gi-hwan, was a good student, at least in elementary, middle school. So anyway, he had all the leadership qualities. So he may have had some sort of graph or something for how they were getting closer and closer to their goal. That's the basic setup. That's the foundation of how they started.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to what they did. They had a lot of victims. Kim Gi-hwan himself ended up, before they were all captured, he ended up getting caught for rape. He raped I'm not sure if the age was ever revealed, but she was a minor, maybe middle school student.
Oh my.
He raped her, and then he was caught, and he was sent to prison summer 94. But the rest of the group, they continued their crimes. So the kind of the beginning of the end for them was in autumn of 1994. So after Kim Gi-hwan, the ringleader, was in jail, they kidnapped a woman named Lee Sun-young.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've read in various sources that that's not her real name. It's a pseudonym, because she's being protected. So she was about 27 or so years old at the time. She was kidnapped with her boyfriend, and his name was Lee Jong-won. Mm-hmm. And they were kidnapped in Yeoksam Station. Not near the station, but Yeoksam District in Gangnam. And they worked in a coffee shop. So they were kidnapped, and within the whole point was to get money out of them. And when they found out that the boyfriend didn't have any money, they killed him. And then they made it look like a car accident.
Well, they couldn't reach their goal.
They're upset. But they kept the young woman, Lee Sun-young. They kept her. And they raped her, and they tortured her, and they beat her, but they didn't kill her. They kept her in that basement.
Mm-hmm.
With the incinerator where they were burning bodies. A couple days after that, the group captured, where was this? This was in Gangnam City, which is in Gyeonggi-do. They kidnapped a married couple in their early 40s. The man's name was So Yoon-oh, and the woman's name was Park Mi-ja.
Mm-hmm.
And they were kidnapped, they got money out of them. Something like 100 million won at the time, but 100 grand. And then after they got money out of them, they forced Yi Sun Young, the woman who that they had kidnapped and whose boyfriend they had murdered, they forced her to kill the husband.
Oh my.
And she did it with an air gun, I guess an industrial grade air gun. So after that, they then murdered the wife, Pak Mi-ja, with an axe. And at least one of the group, after she was murdered, started eating her body.
Oh, God.
So they went from kidnapping, theft, grind theft, murder, to cannibalism. Now, a couple days after that, this leads into how they eventually were all captured. One of the members, Kim Hyun Yang was his name. He somehow had an accident with dynamite and he injured himself. I believe it was a head injury. He set off dynamite of some sort and he injured himself.
Don't play with fireworks. Don't
play with dynamite. Yeah.
Yeah.
For all the kids at home, don't play with dynamite. So he injured himself. He needed to go to the hospital. So he went, but he didn't want to go with any of the rest of the gang, or they didn't want to go. So he took Yi Sun Young with him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was in the hospital getting treated, she escaped.
Mm-hmm.
She made her way to a taxi. She jumped in the taxi. She was probably disheveled, you know, panicked, and obviously visibly upset. So the taxi driver asked her what was wrong. And she told him that she was being chased by gangsters. And then the driver said to her, "Oh, well, who is it? I know all the gangsters in this town."
That's not what I want to hear.
Exactly. That freaked her out. So she was able to get the driver to take her to some place where she was able to get out, get to safety. She got to Seoul. She decided she wanted to make her way to Seoul via Daejeon. I believe she rented a car, got her way to Seoul, and then she went to one of the head police stations in Seoul, told them what had happened, and then they all, the police started their investigation, and the members of the Jijeon faction, the Jijeon clique, were all captured. Roughly a year after they were sentenced to death, they were all executed. And the execution was early November 1995. November 2nd, I think it was, 1995. Mm-hmm. And that ended their reign of terror, to use a cliche.
Wow.
Yeah. So like I said, I think that's often the kind of the forgotten, one of the main crimes in modern Korean history that's just kind of forgotten about. A lot of people don't really talk about it too much. And we don't talk about it on our tours. One key thing that really always comes to mind when I think about crimes like this,
mm-hmm,
is that they were focused on the rich initially. Now, not all of their victims ended up being rich.
This is the case. I think Yi Young Chul was the same way.
Right.
Richer than them.
That's right. Yeah. So that's part of it. Like maybe like the way you and I see rich, they may have seen you and I as rich.
Oh yeah. People.
So this is the key thing that always strikes me is that, yeah, Yu Young Chul did the same thing. He had a focus on rich, especially old rich men. He hated the rich from since he was a little kid because he grew up poor. All of the members of the Jijeon family, Jijeon clique, were poor, grew up poor. So they had this resentment for the rich. But it often strikes me, we can go back in time. We can go way back in time. This similar ideology exists all throughout history. So in Korea, there's the Donghak Rebellion.
No, Donghak, Eastern Learning.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that, That's a massive, if anyone's interested, that if we were to talk about that.
Oh, I want to go into several. That one. I want to get Neff involved in that one.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. We can have a lot of good guests on to talk about.
Robert Neff would be great on that one. Yeah, Donghak, every time I read it, and this is one of those things that's like, I have to keep rereading it all the time because it gets really complicated.
Right.
But but to me, the Donghak movement, there's still some like echoes, scars of that movement. Now, I wouldn't even say scars, but it seasons the culture, the today's culture, yes. I think.
Yeah. No, I agree. And for everyone listening, if you're not sure, you can look up Donghak Rebellion or Donghak Movement. You'll find it. The Donghak Peasant Rebellion. You'll find it with a Google search. It happened in the 1890s, towards the end of the Joseon Dynasty, the last like 15 or so years of the Joseon mm-hmm. Dynasty. But the key thing with that, of course, was the peasants were forced on the land that they didn't own. They had to work it, and they were, you know, tax was a big issue in that, and very, very broad and complicated. But if you go into other countries as well, the French Revolution, also that was about taxation, and that was a 10-year rebellion, roughly 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's a successful one where the Donghak Rebellion was suppressed; it got squashed. The French were successful.
You know, we've had a few rebellions. Whiskey Rebellion was in the U.S. Mm-hmm. was squashed, you know, similar.
Right. But like say in France, they executed Louis the 16th and whatnot. So when we have these large movements, when people get together and it's politically motivated, there's a political reason for it because that social class is being more so oppressed than they usually are. When these things happen in history and we look back at them, look back on them, they're often viewed through a lens of appreciation almost or sympathy. And people agree with what these people were doing. The common mm. classes agree. But when something similar happens among smaller groups and serial killers, of course, then they're vilified. Now, I'm not justifying murder by bringing this up, but what is the difference? What is the difference between those peasants in the 1890s who established this Donghak Rebellion against the elites and against the people who were oppressing them? What is the difference between them and the Jijong family, who had, in their minds anyway, very similar idea that they were being oppressed. They were deprived of opportunities in society. So what is the difference? What's the difference, Joe? That's not a rhetorical question.
I thought maybe people could post some comments on our website. I don't know. Would you say Donghak was doing it just to extort money? I mean, I think Donghak was looking for a total society change, overthrow the monarchy. Sure. And I would say it was the closest Korea got to the Meiji Restoration in a way, modernizing Korea. The Donghak, I could be totally wrong. Donghak saw what was happening in China and Japan with the West encroaching, and Donghak was a rejection of the West. That's why I said Eastern learning. It was modernizing, but on Korean terms.
Right. Yeah. Like they. That's right. Because there was a resentment that Queen Min was sympathetic with China, or she was on the Chinese side.
It was an anti-foreigner movement too. Yeah. So
yes, that's right. That's right. But that is, to me, that's an interesting thing, how these smaller groups like Jijon can get organized by the lowest part of society and rebel in a very violent way. Very graphic and terrible, violent way,
mm-hmm.
and they get executed, of course, and then they're looked upon as being criminals. But a lot of the peasants in the Donghak movement, at least, you know, not so much, not really at that time, but throughout history, as time has gone on, they're revered and respected a little bit more.
Yeah.
Their movement is seen with a little bit, is seen as almost nationalistic, as doing something good for the country.
So the difference between a revolutionary and a murderer.
Yeah, that's my question to everyone. Where does the political divide come in, or the social divide come in, that puts them in two different camps, that separates them so much so that they one side is vilified and the other one is eventually revered. I think that's something I like to hear. If anyone has any comments on that, come, I don't know, on comment sections anywhere, or
we will on our website, darksideofsoul.com/podcast. You can leave a comment on there, and also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/darksideofsoul, where we also do watch parties, watching horror films or unsolved mysteries, things like
that. Yes, on Friday nights.
Yes, yeah. And we still run. I didn't say this at the top of the show. We still run the Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk.
Yes.
Listeners who are new to the show, that's what we were talking about, tours. We run tours.
And so, that's right.
you can easily book at darksideofsoul.com. We're still at the end. Well, we're recording this, and it'll be released a little bit later. We're still... It feels like we're almost, I don't want to say the end of the coronavirus, but it's like the hurricane has become a little bit of a light breeze now.
Yes.
And I would just say that we are running the tours. We are practicing social distancing, even though we are still doing the tours. They are outside. So we are, our tours are available year round, and we'd love for you to join us.
Yeah. So before we finish up, I want to leave everyone with something linked to what we talked to today. Now, Korea, of course, is generally considered, comparatively anyway, to be a very, very safe society.
Yeah.
But in the last couple of years, major crimes have been increasing. So Korea's pioneering criminal profiler is named Kwon Il-yong.
Mm-hmm.
And he said in 2017 in an interview that crimes today, meaning in Korea, are increasingly... the result of rage and anger caused by social inequality.
Mm.
So in this current environment that we're living in with the virus, coronavirus and all that kind of thing, things are the division or the lines of division are becoming less blurred. People are focusing on them a little bit more. So, I'm curious if a result of this, the way things are going now, I don't think the next major thing we're going to see in the world is a war. I think we're going to see a mass revolution.
Whoa. Okay.
And, that's just my thought. And I think, some criminal crime profilers like Kwon Il-yong, who says that crime is worsening in Korea because of this kind of inequality, I'm wondering if it's going to spread globally and give us a wider revolution like we've never seen before.
I wonder if we're going to see more crimes now with how it is.
Well, yeah.
Mm.
Happening in other countries.
Well,
looting and the sort.
We want to thank everyone for listening. Good show today. Just point out, we have music is by Sorek-san. If you can help support us by going to our Patreon page, which we will post in the show notes. We'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Angel, Joel, and Sharon. We have three different classes, and you can each from $5 to $20 a month supports the show, and you get extras. You get video versions of the podcast. You get it before anyone else does. We release them earlier for patrons, and you get depending on the tier, you get some music. You can get Sean does special weird tales from Korean history and
Korean lore.
Mm. Yeah, Korean lore, and those are extra mini podcast. The highest tier, you even get a little loot in your mailbox once a month.
Yeah.
So remember, darksideofsoul.com/podcast. Sean, thank you so much tonight. It's been good to see
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. Yep.
All right. Chat soon. All right. Stay spooky.
Good night.